Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. It will cost you 30 cent. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. Just to remind you, on Friday, we will be having our outside broadcast from a small private cinema here in Dublin, where the audience who come along will get to view the Lifetime channel production of A Royal Romance, which details the romance between Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. And then we'll discuss nuances and subtext afterwards during the course of the programme. We do have a couple of seats, I think, still available for that. If you'd like to come along, 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Just tell us your name, where you are in the country. Yeah, we'd need you there for, it is in Dublin, obviously. We need you there at about 11 o'clock in the morning for the screening. There'll be cucumber sandwiches and a cardboard cutout of the Queen. You can have your photograph taken with, and you can drink some Bolly. There won't actually be Bolly. It'll be some sort of cheap. There will actually be Bollinger there. Oh, sorry. Clark, I'm very excited there. I was just going to say some cheap knockoff. But no, actual Bollinger will be available on the day. And then we'll go into a live show of Movies and Booths. So if you'd like to come along to that, you just have to text in 53106. That will cost you 30 cent. Obviously, you'll have to be there for 11 o'clock until the show ends at 4 o'clock. In the meantime, Joanna Fortune joins us once again for our parenting slot. Joanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First question is this. My 14-year-old boy is in trouble with the guards because he is egging people's homes, knick-knacking and running off. He had a friend over on Saturday night and a box of 5 e-cigarettes fell out of his friend's bag. I can't seem to get through to him and I'm tearing my hair out. I need help, so I'm looking for counselling for him. Is this the right thing to do?
Yeah, a few things in this. I mean, starting at the end of the letter, is it the right thing to do? It is the right thing to do if your son is open to a process like that and sees that there is something to work on. Otherwise, you're going to spend a lot of money and he's going to sit there staring silently at the therapist that you're paying by the hour, and very little is going to come of it. So I'm going to suggest that rather than seek counselling or therapy for him, maybe seek some support, parenting support sessions for yourself. And I don't mean there's anything wrong with your parenting, but looking at ways, strategies, tweaks that you can make to your parenting to affect a change in him that might stop you pulling your hair out is what I'm thinking. So I think I would start with that and just see how that goes, because sometimes if some of your responses change even slightly, it could actually bring him to a place where maybe he would be open to a process like that himself. It is very typical for teens to experiment with new friends, experiment with their identity, to seek to wildly at times differentiate themselves from their parents. Look, I'm nothing like you. This is who I'm like. Mm. That's quite normal. Not pleasant, but normal. As is risk-taking behaviour, I mean, we know that the adolescent brain develops in such a way that that impulsive part of the brain that says, do it, develops very quickly in adolescence. But the part of the brain associated with, do you know what, is that really such a good idea? Maybe I should weigh that up. That takes most people till their mid-20s to fully develop. And most people, I stress there, I don't want to say all people. So the fact that he is engaged in what I'd call, coming out of mild because it's involving the guards, but still at a moderate level of risk-taking behaviour. So now is a good time to try and get in and do something about this. Overall, I'd always say that adolescence, while it's a second bite at the developmental apple, it does bring about that it's the time for all the groundwork you put in when he was little, all the kind of injunctions, counter-injunctions, permissions, do this, don't do that, boundaries and limits, everything you put in when he was little, now he has to draw on. He may need your guidance in reminding him he has all of that groundwork in there, if you think he has it. So that brings me to the question, what was he like as a young boy? Like, what was he like? Was he a risk taker? Was he a do it kind of kid? Is this just the same stuff but older, ergo harder to manage? Or is this very different to how he was and there's been a shift since he entered adolescence? So there's a few questions there. Reflect on your own relationship with risk. What were you like as a teenager? Was it something that you did a lot of and that's why you're so worried, or you did none of and that's why you're so worried? But I think you could sit him down, not in a kind of reprimanding moment, but when things are a little calmer, and reflect your concerns. Let them know you're a bit worried that the guards are involved. You're a bit worried that this is a pattern of behaviour and it does need to stop. But you want to do that with him and not to him. Mm. I show an interest in the friends, even if you don't like them, especially if you don't like them. Show an interest. Invite them over. I'd rather they're in my house than knick-knacking on everyone else's houses. So I think those are the way to start. But I'm going to say go down the counselling therapy route yourself first, with him in mind.
Yeah.
So that you're almost bringing him to therapy, but through you.
Yeah. And the egging, I'm speaking from my own experience here, but the egging seems to be a kind of a testosterone thing. We egg your house, then you egg our house. Now, people ring the guards because the bloody egg stains are impossible to
absolutely
get out. Oh, and they ruin the house.
And nobody wants that. So, I mean, we can't be too flippant because, yeah. You know, if he was doing it to my house, I'd also be saying, here, we have a problem. You can't do that. Yeah. But I'd still put it in the moderate level of risk-taking behaviour. But I would like to see that kind of address now before it escalates any further.
Yeah. The e-cigarette thing, though, is...
Yeah.
Because one of my kids said, do you know what a Juul is? Which I didn't know. Mm. It's spelled J-U-U-L, but apparently it's huge with teenagers and it's vaping. Mm. But it's a Juul. And then I read an article about it and it's huge in the States as well, of course. And it looks like... It looks like a flash drive. It doesn't look anything an e-cigarette. And you can just... So you can actually bring it into school and plug it in. And even though you're not supposed to sell it to under 18s...
They all have it.
They all have it. There's a huge market online. And it's funny that teenagers are vaping. They think smoking is disgusting.
Absolutely.
But they're vaping, which is every bit as addictive.
Completely. And they're oblivious to any health risks associated with it. They think they're doing something that's almost environmentally conscious in their smoking choice. But actually, you know, that just brings about that. That's true of not just teenagers. A lot of people think it's the healthier option. But there's
still... Well, it is if you were smoking beforehand.
Than,
yeah.
But it's, you know, that's in comparison. It still wouldn't be listed as a healthy behaviour.
No, I think a pretty good analog is that it's methadone.
Yes.
Like you don't take up methadone voluntarily.
No, not as a recreational choice. Yeah. No. And it is. And I suppose that again is from, you know, this parent is looking at, okay, we've got this behavior. And now I'm seeing e-cigarettes entering the equation. This is getting a little bit deeper. So I do think this parent's on the ball, to be honest with you. They're not overreacting, but it is time to react.
But that stuff is,
my
impression is quite common.
That's not, absolutely.
It'll be the next big thing for us to worry about. Just to bring you the good news,
folks. Yes.
Next question is, I have a one-year-old little boy. Is there any way I can tell him that he's being bold without yelling at him? He broke my phone the other day by throwing it. Accidentally, obviously, because he doesn't know what he's doing. But I said, that's very bold. He doesn't know what that means. I don't want to raise my voice. But is there any way of communicating that this is a bad way to behave?
I just love this letter because you're asking and answering your own question all at once. Because, yeah, you say this is bold or he's being bold because you're frustrated, but you're saying he did it accidentally. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't get it. And you're absolutely right on that one as well because he's 1 year old. So I'm going to just wonder, this isn't a kind of statement, it's a wondering. Okay, I'm wondering if you were perhaps engaged with your phone before he threw it. Young children often look up to their parents. I don't mean look up to them moralistically. Mm-hmm. I mean literally look up at them, and they're seeking to meet your gaze. But if they see that your gaze is occupied into a device, that's frustrating for me. And as a one-year-old, I don't have language to say, hey, look at me over here. But I can get your sole focus on me if I take that gadget and throw it away. So I'm wondering about that. Now, you might be saying, no, it was over on the shelf and nothing like that. But just to hold that in mind, because we do have this kind of myth that children are preoccupied with screens and they love them. I mean, children are preoccupied with what we, their parents, are preoccupied with, and we're preoccupied with our screens.
Yes.
So they're taking their lead from us. So have the other thing I'm going to say is that try to avoid telling him he's being bold, because at this age, his sense of self is very much a developing process. It's not developed yet. So he's beginning to internalize what we'd call an inner working model, where what is his view of himself, of others and the world around him. And you don't want to get that bold concept in there, because not that you damage him, but you'll just inspire him and he won't let you down. So while that's developing, if he internalizes I'm bold, he will certainly deliver on that. So try not to say that. That'd be the other thing I'd say. There's really no disciplining a one-year-old. It's about distraction and redirection.
Mm.
So all you can actually do with this is, and I'm not saying ignore it, because you do have to use your no or your ah-ah or whatever in your, you know, gentle yet firm tone. Come down to his eye level, hold his hands. Remember, you know, hands are good for hitting when you're at the right eye level. So hold his hands, say no, take the device out of his way, but then quickly redirect. And if you have a sense that he's frustrated and he does want to throw something, when you redirect him, use that. Bring him into a game where you're going to throw a ball over and back to each other or roll a ball over. But use the throwing impulse he has, but have him throw something that is a logical part of the activity.
Mm.
Throwing a ball, throwing cotton balls at each other or scrunched up toilet roll as snowballs inside the house. Something that's not going to hurt, but he gets to throw and release that frustration and tension. That is what you're going to be doing. Always think of discipline. Now, in general, to be honest with you, but particularly at this young age, if you're thinking of discipline, it should be to teach behavior you want to see, not punish behavior you don't want to see.
Yeah.
So you're not going to punish a one-year-old because by the time the phone is thrown and you've come over to him, he's forgotten why you're over with him. And so if you say you're bold or don't do this, he doesn't do the linking yet. He can't do cause and effect. So he's not... When you give out, you're just mean in his mind. You're just being a mean grown up, and it has nothing to do with what I did.
Yeah. The text says, we say ah, or when we mean no and bold, it works fine. I say it and shake my head. No issues, and they understand. But then again, I say you have to do that immediately.
Oh, or, immediately.
Yeah.
Like instantly. And then moments later, that's forgotten. So you're going to be ah-ahing a number of times during the day. And when you're out in public and your small child says ah-ah to someone, you go, oh my gosh, people think that's all I say to that child. And sometimes it is. They need to hear things over and over and over to get it. But it's no harm. You're putting boundaries and limits in place. But manage your expectations. He's not going to understand or make repair for that.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, we're going to have to take our break after that. A seven-year-old who already has a complex about being overweight. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Going back to the question that we started with the 14-year-old who's egging houses and getting into a few scrapes. One texter says, counselling, why would you resort to that? Sounds like normal behaviour of a teenager, really. Well, you know, probably not uncommon, but not
being involved would just take it slightly out of the realm of normal, but that's all.
Next question is, my daughter is only 7 but already has a complex about being fat. I don't know where she got this from, as both her mother and I have been working hard to develop her confidence. We'd never mention weight. I have heard her playing with friends, but can't isolate if they are influencing her. She's a gorgeous girl and a healthy weight. She should have no concerns. What can we do?
I mean, yeah, this is just the parenting reality, isn't it? You've done it all right. You've provided, you know, your daughter with all kinds of access to play and the right books and the right kind of opportunities. And you've used all the right language, and still this comes. And it's because there is a multi-billion dollar industry competing against you to make sure she does question her self-esteem.
Yeah.
And that starts really, really young. And that's what you're up against as a parent and parenting against. And of course, what we want is that our core message and value is what she defaults to. But in some ways, it's unavoidable. Now, the other thing I'd say is just watch that when she says something like that, you know, about, you know, I'm fat or I think I'm fat. What does she mean by that? What does she understand that to mean? Does she mean it's a bad thing, or is it a statement? Or, you know, I wouldn't just assume she has low self-esteem because of that. And also perhaps when she says it, she's getting quite a big reaction from her parents. They're going, oh my goodness, don't say that. And you're beautiful and you're this.
Yeah.
And so that might also be something she's trying out. So maybe instead of that, just, you know, quietly look at her and say, and why would you say that? And see, what does she come back with then?
Yeah.
Because often what I would say is happening here is that she clearly has a good relationship with her parents. She trusts you. She's looking to you as someone she trusts to reassure her. So I would go with the, why would you say that? Where is that coming from? Why do you think that? Here's what I think. And then very quickly get off what your body looks like and redirect her to what her body can do. You can run so fast. You can jump so high. You can do however many skips, you know, things. Mm. Look at what the body can do rather than what it looks like. And I think that's going to be using language around strong and healthy. We do know, and again, I'm not making an assertion or an assumption here, but just to put it out there, that the biggest influence on young girls developing a language at a young age about their weight or about what they look like is that they hear it at home. One or other parent is a dieter or a yo-yo, waiter up and down. So watch if you've got language, and you know whether you're talking about food in terms of numbers, grams, yeah, points, sins, whatever language you're using, really be mindful around that, because your child is like a sponge. So if they see you worrying or looking at your waistline forlornly in the mirror or things like that, they're taking that up. It's very common at her age that she would put herself in a role of a parent or an adult and say, well, look at my tummy, or look at this. Mm. And in order to better understand it from an adult perspective. So again, I'm not making an assumption that's happening, because you seem to be doing a lot of proactive work to build up her self-esteem. But in general, for anyone else listening, just be really careful about that kind of mindset at home.
But if they're being careful around the language they use about her,
But not themselves. Exactly.
And someone could be saying, God, I'm so fat, and in a mournful kind of way.
Or, you know, yeah, going, oh, this doesn't fit me, or yeah, sighing, you know, deeply when you look at yourself. Children pick up on all of those nuances. Even if you think, God, I never say it, but I do think it. They're picking up on things from you, nonverbal communication all the time. So again, not to assume it's happening, but just be very, very cautious about that. And be really aware of what media she's exposed to as well.
Yeah, a few people texting about that as well. Yeah,
I would. That's where I'd nearly be starting. And just again, think about, what is she watching? I mean, she could be watching designated children's TV programs, and they could still be, you know, peppered with references, inferences, and little subtle hints in this area. So maybe sit with her for an afternoon and watch what she's watching, but watch it through her eyes and not your own. What would this be like if I was a 7-year-old girl? And more than that, what would this be like if I was my 7-year-old girl?
Yeah, indeed. I'm taking my daughter for a week in June when my ex goes on holidays. She's 18 months and cries hysterically when her mother isn't with her. She's very attached to her. I have her 3 weekends in the month, and I'm worried about how a week alone will go if she's very upset. Any tips?
Ooh, yeah. That sounds like you're really looking forward to the week.
Yeah, it does,
and
yeah,
I'm sure in lots of ways you are, because you're going to have your daughter, you know, for that time. And it's going to be a wonderful kind of bonding and attunement opportunity. I mean, she's at an age developmentally where people permanence is kicking in now, 18 months. We tend to look at 12 to 18 months as that window where, you know, when you go, you cease to exist, but now I can hold you in mind. So things, I wouldn't assume, because, you know, historically, she's really struggled with separation. She may actually do a bit better with it now that she's over 18 months. That said, you have her 3 weekends in the month. I'm not clear if you have her overnights at those weekends or if it's during the day. So if you don't currently have her overnights, I would actually start building some of that in leading up
absolutely
to this. And if you have her weekends in the month, maybe consider, if it's possible now, adding on a day. So that rather than bringing her back to her mother on a Sunday evening, I'm just assuming that, maybe look at doing it Monday instead, so that, you know, the time period that she's been away is gradually increased before it jumps from a weekend, 2 days, to a week, which is, you know, a huge jump from a child's perspective. I'd link in with her mum proactively about what her current routine is, what works for them at home during
must be
the week.
Comforting things.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, what are her favorite songs, her favorite books? What does bedtime look like? Bring some photos, you know, of mum into the house. Again, you know, if that's kind of going, I don't really want photos of my ex in the house. Could you do it for a week? Could you put it in your daughter's bedroom?
Yeah. And if the daughter starts going, mommy,
that it's there, you know. And I think as well, if you have a scarf or a t-shirt or a top of mum's that mum's been wearing and smells of her, that kind of sensory comfort is really reassuring for children. The other thing I'm going to put out there, and again, it might not be possible, but it might be, so I'm going to say it, is it possible to spend the week in your ex's house with her so that she's in her most familiar surrounding?
Yeah.
Instead of her going to your house, could you go and stay there?
Yeah.
Again, people may be listening going, your ones in La La Land. Yes. There's no way that's going to happen. But, you know, maybe it could.
Maybe it could. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's not a bad idea if it's practicable. But, you know, from the 18 month old's point of view, that's.
Because that's when I'm in my familiar place, you know, that's going to make me feel much calmer and more reassured.
Yeah. Yeah. My 2.5-year-old has been in a wonderful creche where she is very settled and happy. We have been informed that it is being closed in a few months' time. How would Joanna advise to manage the transition, as we are worried that she will not react well to the change? We moved house 4 months ago and she doesn't like her new room.
Yeah, it's a lot of change, unfortunately, in a short period of time. So your wonderful creche, because they are giving parents a heads up that they're closing, I'm going to go out there and assume that they have a little plan on how they're going to manage this closing for the children as well. So maybe reach out and talk to them about that. What are they planning to do? There could be like a memory collage board that they do for each child, things that they like about creche. And maybe the creche could take care of that piece in terms of the ending. And what you could focus on is the transition forward. So if you've identified a new creche, you're going to start now doing regular drive-bys and pointing it out super enthusiastically, saying, you know, this is your new creche and it's a lovely place and it's wonderful, you're going to have so much fun. And when you get home, whoever the other parent at home is that hasn't been on the drive-by, go, we saw Susie's creche today and it's the best creche out there. And you know, you want to be like super super positive about it. Another thing you could do is take a photo of the new creche and put it onto like a poster board and draw a map, like different steps, and have a photo of your child with blue tack, and every morning she gets to lift the blue tack photo of herself and move it one step closer. So visually on the poster board, she's moving herself closer to the new creche. So she sees that transition is coming. Children of her age are very visual. You're not going to be able to cognitively prepare her and reason with her. So you've got to do it in this very experiential way. Taking her to a shop so she could buy a new backpack or a new drink beaker, that is for the new creche as well, but not arriving home with it. Look what I bought you. Having her with you so she chooses it and she's part of the process. That's all going to help. But transitions are tough at any age, particularly at this one. So anticipate mild to moderate levels of behavioural or emotional regression. You might see younger behaviours you haven't seen before, or you haven't seen in a while rather. But be as available as you can. So when she starts the new creche, maybe if you could take a week off work, and be very available for the drop-offs and pick-up and how was your day, and help her negotiate that change. All of those on their own small steps, but together will help that a lot.
If they knew where some of the other kids were going, that might help too.
And there may actually be an overlap. There tends to be geographically. So, I mean, that would be great if she had a little buddy, a familiar face on her first day in there.
Yeah. My three-year-old keeps pretending to be a dog, growling at us and other kids if he's annoyed. He won't talk, he'll just growl. Other kids are afraid when he does it. I'm simply bewildered. Should I stop him or let him use his imagination?
Yeah, I mean, if this is your child is growling purely when they're annoyed and only in that instance, but otherwise they're well able to engage, talk, connect, communicate, I wouldn't be so worried about it. If he's using growling or animal noises in lieu of language a lot of the time, I'm going to suggest you seek out a speech and language therapist or an early years assessment, just to see, is there a language acquisition issue there? But what I'm going to assume is actually it's just when he's annoyed. And in that case, at 3 years old, maybe he doesn't know how else to communicate, I'm really cross and annoyed. And in his mind, annoyed, the feeling sounds like or looks like an angry dog growling. So that makes complete sense to him to make that association. So I would, when it happens, you're saying it frightens other children, try as best you can, as quickly, without being dramatic now, remove him from the action. So remove him from wherever you are with the other kids. Co-regulate him. Come down to his level, hold his hands and say, that was a really good dog noise. Do you know a rabbit noise? Do you know a bird noise? Do you know a little boy noise? Because I don't speak dog. I only speak, here we go, you're back with me. And then redirect him back into the action. But he can't do that on his own. He's going to need some help with that. So then when he's not angry, when he's just playing at home with you, practice feeling faces. So you put on a face and ask him to guess what the feeling is. And don't just do angry or annoyed ones. Do a whole mix of feelings and ask him then to do the same. And then say to him, let's practice what words you say when you're feeling happy and what words you say when you're sad and what words you say when you're annoyed. But practice that when he's calm so that he then has that instead of growling. So don't be panicking about it. But yeah, I'd respond to it.
Yeah. My 9-year-old daughter is still sucking her thumb. It drives me and her mother mad, as we hate the habit. We have tried giving out to her, taking away privileges, working towards incentives and rewards to ignoring her, but nothing works. How do I make her stop this disgusting habit?
Okay. Crikey. I mean, it's not a disgusting habit to her. It's a comforting action. So at this age, she's 9 years old. I'm going to say, don't do what you're doing. Stop that now. I don't recommend forcing her to stop, because insisting is only going to bring about more resistance from her. She has to decide, or at least sign up with you, that she wants to give it up. So you can do things like, you could certainly put limitations on it. Okay, you're going to suck your thumb. That's your choice. But you can only suck your thumb in the evening time at home or in your bedroom. You can't do it outside. You can't do it at school. You could put a boundary and a limitation down, and that's where your parental controls and guidance can come in, but certainly don't get into a stop it. It's disgusting. You could mention to her that if she was to choose to stop, it would actually help her teeth and the palate of her mouth, and she would not do any further damage. I'm going to say further damage just to the parents, not the child, because at this age, if she's been thumb sucking that long, it might be worth a dental consultation.
Yes, yeah.
And just do that. And also, dentists
have this doesn't seem things. To be their objection doesn't seem to be able to do with teeth, but the just
that it's a dirty habit.
It's a dirty habit.
And I'm going to go back.
Crack or anything, you know.
Well, certainly not. Yeah. And it's not an e-cigarette, it's a thumb.
No, but if it's, you know, my point being is that if she's not doing any damage to her teeth, then what's the biggie?
I would say that it's a comfort measure. So I'm going to say reflect on, you know, how does she experience anxiety or stress, like situations that are challenging? What does that do to her?
Mm.
And is there a pattern to when she's doing this? So then the question flips to, instead of looking at getting her to stop sucking her thumb, how could you help her better manage stress? What else? And if she says, look, I'd really like to be able to stop it, but when I feel this way, it's the thing that makes me feel best.
Yeah.
Could you do, you know, well, the dentist can give you a contraption or a device for it, but could she do some mindfulness or something that's going to be help her relax in those moments, give her an alternative, and present it that you're there to help her with it. But if she's not ready to give that up, I would say back away from it, because it is serving a function. And unless she has something else that can serve that same function, she's going to be slow to give it up. So put a boundary, put a limit on it. If you're worried, look, she's going to get teased or whatever. I'm not sure she is, but if she was going to get teased, tell her that it's something she can do in private at home, but set the challenge to her that, let's see, can you get through the whole day at school without doing it?
Yeah, somebody's texting in. I'm 44. I still suck my thumb. I love it.
I know a few adults who do it
so
as well.
So do I, but who would kind of in the evening in front of the telly. So,
yeah,
you know.
It's usually when you're not thinking about it. And that's really important as well, that she might not be consciously going, now I will suck my thumb.
Yeah.
It may be just, you know, in the same way people sit and twiddle their hair or rub their fingernail. It's a mindless action that I'm switching off, I'm relaxing, I'm distracted. Equally, I'm stressed, anxious, and this is soothing me.
Mm.
So I would be focused on where else can she get comfort.
Yeah. Okay. Joanna, thanks a million for coming
into us.
Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break after that. Locking up our own.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.